regard to the last statement you made, can you say, I mean, it's often in midlife someone will enter into therapy because they're ignored their shadow side and they've kind of fossilized and become too rigid and they need to break out. So that seems like a healthy splitting, if you understand what I'm saying.
What do you mean by healthy splitting, actually?
Well, I mean, they need to allow and embrace their instincts, usually. And that's be pushed into the shadow
and other
things like that. Yeah. But to their ego and conscious mind, that would be betraying perhaps their religious upbringing or whatever societal norms.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't the kind of splitting that I was talking about. What I was talking about was splitting off, for example, in the case of calling a particular social group evil. Like after 9/11, suddenly all Muslims became evil. They carry everything that's bad. We carry everything that's good. That's the kind of more pathological splitting that I was talking about. What you're talking about, I think, is interesting and important, but a different phenomenon, really. I would call that what you're talking about, the return of aspects of the personality that you've never had a chance to become conscious of. So they have been split off in a certain way, but it's a different use of the word. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm listening very closely to what you're saying and taking notes. And I'm just wondering, on an off-the-cuff question, are you contributing to my descent into evil in that I can now see various ways I can control people and make them do evil things?
Only if you have that predisposition in you.
Right, but you're contributing to it.
If you see me as a legitimate authority. Yeah. So those would be the two conditions. From what I can see about you, I don't think there's much danger of that.
Hi, I was wondering about the last part you were talking about. It made me think of compartmentalization.
Yes, that's another defense. Yeah.
And I guess the most extreme example of that in my mind is dissociative identity disorder, where people have kind of walled off personalities that actually have different medical
and they can live side by side without being in touch with each other necessarily.
And that feels very different than a kind of something that's sort of self-deception, because it feels so walled off in that particular diagnosis.
Yeah,
as you
were
talking, it was a great, amazing survey of different kinds of evil. And one of the thoughts I had is, I think they're all true. You know, they're all ways that evil gets expressed.
Yeah, well, I was trying to show the complexity of the subject.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to pin down.
And one other thought I wanted to put out had to do with, I was listening to a story about psychopaths, and there was a woman who was working with them, and she gave an example of an 8-year-old girl who the mother was driving her and her little sister somewhere, and the little sister started screaming, and the mother turned around, and the 8-year-old girl was strangling her sister. So the mother stopped the car, and she said, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, she was horrified by this.
Yeah.
And this little girl, like, said, yeah, she's annoying me. I want to kill her, you know. And the more they talked, the little girl had a plan to kill the mother and the father also. And so, you know, it was one of these horrifying examples of someone, you know, who they were talking about psychopathy, and they and she said what they're trying to do therapeutically is to create what she called cognitive empathy, because it wasn't like an emotional.
There's nothing felt. Yeah.
And so they were actually trying to instill a thinking way of trying to understand that you're hurting someone to stop criminals and.
But those children raise they're quite uncommon, but they do exist. They raise this issue of whether evil is like a bad seed. You know, like Rosemary's Baby, that movie, where they just seem to come out of the womb evil. Or whether it's purely the result of developmental disasters.
Well, your thought about how, you know, this evolved in us, you know, the aggression part, and it occurs to me that for some people, there's a stronger part of that murderous.
That's how the evolutionary psychologist explains psychopathy. They say that it had advantages in our early hominid history. If you were willing to treat other people in this way, your genes would be propagated. So it had evolutionary advantages. So unfortunately, we have a brain that's 100,000 years out of date. That's
Thank you.
I'm aware as I come to this conference that dealing with evil is not easy. And I wonder if you have some things to say about what can help us as a community to deal with a difficult topic like this.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think what we have to avoid is dehumanizing evil people, which would mean that we would treat them the way they treat other people. So that would be a trap. I think you have to be compassionate and empathic even at the same time as you're trying to protect the rest of us. Some of them can be helped with treatment. Some of them just need to be locked up. That's a short answer, but there are a few people who can respond to psychotherapy or social interventions. In special, you're talking about psychopaths in general, or do you have a particular person in mind who shouldn't be? Yeah, I think the problem is not to dehumanize them. The problem is to try to empathically understand them. And if you can, they need treatment. If you can't treat them, they just need to be locked up to protect society. I don't know what else to say about it.
Dr. Corbett?
Oh,
hi. One of my favorite authors is John Youngblood, who's a Quaker Jungian.
Yeah.
And he says his definition of sin is actions that lead to compartmentalization and that take the person away from becoming an integrated whole personality. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that definition, or do you think sin is something that can be defined?
I don't like the word sin. I prefer to think of unconsciousness or ignorance. I think that this is just a private view. A lot of people grow up with a sense of there's something wrong with me, I'm bad in some way, because of the way they're treated. You know, they're criticized and attacked a lot. So they grow up with a sense of badness. And then some religious traditions take advantage of this and say that all human beings, excuse me, are intrinsically sinful and you have a sinful nature. And I think that exploits a developmental failure. I'm sorry if that sounds rather cynical, but...
No, it's fine. Thank you very much.
I'd prefer to think of unconsciousness.
I was struck in my own clinical practice, people with severely disrupted attachment,
yeah,
who become social isolates in a lot of ways, are capable of doing some pretty awful things because they don't have that connection to others. Mm-hmm. And back in December, I was reading in the Washington Post an article by James Homan in which he talked about Ayn Rand and her philosophy of objectivism. And as I was reading it, of course, he said that the current president was a great devotee of Ayn Rand, and a lot of his appointees are Randians. These are people who I think have a severely disrupted attachment.
Yes, I agree.
And Ayn Rand was a perfect example of it,
yeah,
to the point that she became solipsistic. I mean, she was just in, all she could see was what was best for her.
She
now, we can call it narcissism, but...
No, it was that. She thought that altruism, helping other people, was a waste of time and silly.
And almost evil.
Yeah.
had to look out for number one, and that was it.
Yeah. But I think there's something wrong with people like that.
Thank you.
Well, shall we... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you.
I have lots of questions, so I can wait. But the one that comes right now, Randy and I were in a reading group this last semester And the last, one of the last books we read was Elie Wiesel's Night.
Oh, yes.
You know, his account of his experience in the camp. And what has been haunting me since then is the other side. In other words, how do human beings sustain the capacity to hold ongoing atrocity in consciousness and hold the memories and be able to tell the story and not split, not fall apart? I mean, they saw babies played with. They saw children hung. They saw, you know, a year after, everything taken away, everything you believed you thought you were, everything you... And I'm more struck with, right now, I'm more caught by, is it the fact that they were together and shared the witnessing of what they saw? How did people... I know after a lot of difficulty arose, but in the period of being in the camp and watching that level of dehumanization of... I'm really interested in what holds people together.
Yeah, I wish I knew. It's a wonderful question. for some people, it's faith, resilience, qualities like that. Compassion. There are people, there are many reports of people who were tortured by the Nazis who refused to hate.
What's even in that book, you know, the people who withstood weeks of torture and never gave information and never, you know, and that's after years of suffering, after being in the camp for a few years.
And refused to hate the people who were torturing them. There really were genuine Christians. So I think sometimes it's faith and sometimes it's a resilient spirit, but I don't know the answer to that. I've never been in that situation, thank God, so I don't know.
I just want to hold that side while we're holding the other.
Thank you.
I heard something recently about a psychologist who did studies. He was a survivor from the Holocaust, and he was interested in what made people prejudiced. So he did some studies with kids at a camp. He just invited children from all over, and he divided them into two groups. And they, as time went on, they identified with their group, even though there was no difference between them. They were just random selections. And before much time expired, they were fighting each other. One group would go into...
Yeah, that's what I meant by our inherent tribal nature.
But if that's what... But I didn't know what, why, but you were saying that evolution has something to do with the way our brain is constructed.
Because
so
we
how
evolved.
Do we deal with that? Is something like,
well, as I said, we have a brain that's way back in the Paleolithic era.
Yeah, but what do we do about that now?
Educate children. I mean, most of us grow out of that, don't we? Some of us don't. I think it's an educational problem.
Yeah. But the brain is still the same, but our thoughts are
different. Yeah. The hardware is the same, but the software could be different.
I am reminded of a book I read by a woman I actually spoke to briefly at one point in my life. She did not claim to be a hero. She did not claim to have performed noble heroic tasks, but she lived as a German through World War II in Germany and wrote a book about it. It took me a long time to pick up the book and actually read it because the title was Laughter Wasn't Rationed. She was part of a church where the pastor was resisting publicly, and she never identified but felt under the burden of living in the Nazi government. But her larger point was that in order to survive something like that with your conscience intact, you have to give yourself some space to rebel and to share that rebellion with whom you can, and to take that pleasure in subverting the energy of the oppressor by at least acknowledging with those around you that you can image their weaknesses as people, the foolishness of what they're doing in some way with each other, seem to help them remain strong. To make fun of oppressors, humanized these people. I carry that lesson carefully, but I carry it.
Sounds important. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. Well, can we wind down? Thank you.